Entrepreneur, author, and financial consultant Mark Bernstein helps high-performing entrepreneurial business owners create a vision for the future and follow through on their goals and intentions. Ange Honorato is a business growth strategist who blends psychology and business together to create conscious leaders and business owners who impact the world. Founders Forum is a radio show podcast sharing the real stories behind entrepreneurship as founders discover more about themselves while providing valuable lessons and some fun and entertainment for you. Now, here's Mark and Ange.
Good morning, America. How are you? Good morning, Arlo. Good morning, Ange. Good morning, Dr. Scott Fried. By the way, we're on Zoom today, and that was really weird because I don't know about you guys, but I couldn't hear my music at the beginning. We could only hear the voices, so it was a little strange coming in without the lead-in music. Beautiful day here, a cold day in Philadelphia. Hopefully it's nice wherever you are listening to this podcast, and we're on the radio on WWDB AM in Philadelphia. Our topic for today is going to be change. Because I've noticed, and we've been talking a lot about the shift that's going on in the world amongst all the horrible news that we hear every day. And but I just started thinking about what it takes to change as things are changing around us. And I know that impacts me on a daily basis. You know, we've talked a lot about resilience, and we talked about the fact that it used to be resilience was something you used to have to call on every once in a while. And now it seems like you have to be resilient every day. Right. And so that means we constantly have to be changing as well. And Ange, I'd like to get your thoughts on that first.
Yeah, well, we were chatting offline and, you know, I think it's a necessary skill set to have. But in 2023, just like the last 2 years, 3 years have been nothing if not filled with change. Right. So, you know, on a global basis, on a business perspective, and really, I think down to the individual level, you know, we talk about the fact that many of us that have been doing sort of personal development growth journeys have kind of already been keyed in the fact that you do have to be resilient and be ready for change. And now I think that message is kind of permeating, you know, far and wide. So definitely a good topic and a good time of the year to pay attention to, you know, what is it that we need to do to build those skills and be ready for what's next?
I know in my business, which I've been in my financial planning business over just about 40 years now, that I've had to constantly change because tax laws change, you know, all kinds of things. But also environment, working culture, which you like to talk about, Ange, you know, business culture's changed. So I've had to change the way I operate within my business, with our staff, with my partners, and have done a lot of work on myself to sort of keep up and stay ahead. Developmental work, which we've talked about before, internal changes, as well as external, the obvious things, you know, just work habits and things like that. Certainly doing business on Zoom. We're in our second pandemic in the business right now because our office is under construction. So since for the last 2.5 months, we're working remotely again, you know, so fortunately we've had experience with that, but even this time's a little different than the last time. So there's all those things. Dr. Scott Fried, how about you? How do you react with change?
I think change is healthy. I embrace change. And in fact, it's something that's inevitable in all of our lives every day, every moment. The world changes and our worlds change according to where we are, what we're doing, what we're exposed to. And change brings about that low level of stress to us, which is the key to us actually improving our lives. It actually stimulates us to move forward. So change within reason, of course. The dramatic changes are always tougher, but change within reason is an expectation. And I think it's the part of living that brings excitement to my life rather than the other way around. Otherwise, I would just sit and do exactly the same thing every single day.
That's great. I'm very well said, first of all, and I would agree with you. I have learned to embrace it. I will tell you, it was not always that easy for me to embrace quick change. But I think I've become somewhat expert at it these days because, you know, we have to.
I would say you have.
Well, I appreciate that. So I do need to disclose Dr. Scott Fried is a friend of mine, and he's often called Dr. Scott. But if, I'm going to call him Scott because that's what I call him. But you can call him Dr. Scott. Perfect. He said, he says you can call him anything that his wife, Laura, who we're going to talk about, has trained him well on that. He answers to almost anything. And
pretty much.
So let me tell you about him. He is the chief surgeon and founder at the Upper Extremity Institute in Bluebell, Pennsylvania. And he's also president of Doctor in the House, which is a little more interesting. And we'll get to talk about that. And I'm just going to tell you one sentence about Scott, and the rest of it's going to be told in this story. He's a surgeon whose mission is to put himself out of business by helping people to heal themselves. And me as a patient, who I've seen him before, I can attest that to be true. He's a surgeon who's the last guy to recommend surgery. So I know there's a story behind that, Scott, with your father and some health issues he had and how you were influenced to go in that direction. Would you mind telling us about that?
Not at all, Mark. Thanks. And I think you healed yourself, by the way.
I agree with coaching.
Yeah. Basically, my childhood was interesting. My dad was a clinical psychologist and spent a lot of his work teaching people relaxation hypnosis techniques as well. He unfortunately had five heart attacks and bypass surgery by the time he was 52 years old. The bypass surgery further failed miserably. In fact, when I was a resident, I reviewed his catheterization tapes, the tapes which showed the blood vessels after the surgery, and he literally had no blood vessels in his heart. None of the original blood vessels existed anymore. They were all closed off. And he had very thin collateral or extra vessels that had grown in the heart, which our hearts will do. And Dad lived 24 years after that unsuccessful bypass surgery, living a normal life. He worked three jobs. He raised a family. We had a great life. And up until the last year of his life, no one would ever have known he was sick. He had limitations and he had pain every day. Yeah, he was an unbelievable man. And I came to understand that he did that by kind of sitting on the couch every afternoon for 20 minutes and closing his eyes. And he would visualize himself healthy and visualize growing new vessels in his heart. And he actually did. And he was an amazing man. And I decided early in my life, I didn't particularly want to have the five heart attacks and the surgery. And perhaps that's the reason I ended up a surgeon. But I didn't trust the medical system too much. I came to trust the fact that we can heal ourselves and take care of ourselves. And he taught me the techniques that he had learned. He was a pilot in the war in Burma. And he brought back these techniques, these relaxation meditation techniques, which were the basis of my understanding that we can heal ourselves and we are in control of our worlds and our lives and our bodies, as well as our healing. And as long as we embrace that and understand that, we become much better able to take care of ourselves. And the sidebar is to that, we have much happier lives. I meditate every day and I teach my patients. I put patients under hypnosis and do surgery on them, and they need minimal medication. They wake from their surgery and the worst thing they say is, "I have to pee." It's a marvelous thing to watch and to experience, and the experiences that patients have in learning, taking care of themselves, and I've done this thousands of times, is miraculous to watch.
Well, you know, I'm a meditator twice daily. Yes. As well. And just to testify to this, so I know you know the works of Dr. John Sarno, and you know my wife, Susan, and she, yes, she's had a lot of back pain over the last year that came from nowhere. Now, I knew it's not because I'm a genius, but because I'm on the outside. Her mother also passed away in the last year, and she had enormous stress with that. And I knew that her mother's health issues and the stress she went through caring for her and everything else were connected to that back pain. But she couldn't see that. So she went to doctors, she did all kinds of things. She's now going to acupuncture, which is helping. But finally, I was able to get in the conversation. She got well enough that she was able to hear when I talked to her about Dr. John Sarno. So she's reading his book now, and she's starting to do the things. And immediately, she's feeling better already. And now she finally believes that she can heal herself. So,
see, Mark, you're a healer, and your wife, we know, is a healer.
right. She is in another way. Correct.
Yes.
So yeah. So anyway. So that's so I can testify that. Scott, in building your practice, I know that, you know, every entrepreneur has obstacles. Our show's about entrepreneurs and founders of businesses. And I know you run into trouble along the way, and also know that you have certain characteristics of strength that have helped you deal with them. Could you give an example of obstacles you've had and how you've had to overcome them?
Well, just picture a surgeon trying to convince other surgeons that surgery isn't the way to go. And then further telling them that...
I had a feeling you might say that, by the way. I had a feeling that's where we're going to go with this. Yeah.
And try doing a national meeting where you're telling a group of world-class seasoned surgeons that, they should teach their patients to meditate. obstacles, being different. I started early in my practice, and in your residency, you're trained to do surgery, to be a great technician, to take care of people, identify the problem, and fix it with surgery. And we would operate on patients and then see them maybe once after the operation, and then never see them again. When I went into practice, I'm an orthopedic surgeon by training, and my subspecialties upper extremity surgery, hand to neck and fingertips down. But problems like carpal tunnel and things like that. And I follow my patients for a long time after I operate on them. They become my friends. And they tell me things I sometimes don't want to hear. Just like my wife, but they make me a better person. And what I found was that over the course of time, many of the patients I operated on were initially better, but then they kind of just didn't maintain that betterness. They weren't as good. I thought for a long time, maybe I'm not that good a surgeon. And then I would go to national meetings and talk about this with people, and they'd say, you're not doing it right. We don't have those results. And then when I dug deeper, I found that nobody followed their patients because we weren't trained that way. And it came to understand that, surgery doesn't always work. And a lot of other things work, as you found with Susan, that there's lots of ways to skin a cat, back pain, arm pain, nerve pain, many of these diseases that we all face, cancer, in healing cancer.
Interesting. Do you have a quick question, Ange? Because we have a break in about a minute and a half.
Yeah, so we're going to take a break here, but this is so fascinating. And I'll just kind of lob the topic out. We'll take a break and maybe come back with this. But, really would love to talk a little bit about your thoughts on the future of medicine, and with the caveat that I understand completely where you're trying to disrupt the way things have been taught. I had that same experience in my clinical psychology training, where anything around self-healing or self-leadership wasn't even in our textbooks, right? Yeah. So, and how impactful that is. So we'll take a break, and when we come back, we'd love to kind of start there and get your thoughts on that.
Great. Well, I think you'll enjoy this commercial by Doctor in the House, and we'll be back in a minute.
Elevate your healing journey with doctor-developed products helping people heal themselves. Let orthopedic surgeon Dr. Scott Fried teach you to heal neck, back, shoulder, wrist, hand, and knee injuries the easy way, often without surgery, using Doctor in the House innovative patented products. They even have their patented meditation sleep mask that helps you relax and heal. Experience the Doctor in the House advantage. Doctor approved quality for retail and DME providers. Covered by most insurance plans. Superior customer service. Their full product line offers unique solutions with their patented step-down, semi-flexible, heat-moldable panels. Doctor-in-the-house medical devices redefine rehabilitation and are tested on real-world patients. Trust in the hands of a seasoned orthopedic surgeon. Choose Doctor-in-the-house for healing that goes beyond the ordinary. Your journey to recovery starts with Doctor-in-the-house. Visit docinthehouse.com for more information.
We are back on Founders Forum. So, Ange.
Before the break, I had lobbed out the concept of, you know, the idea that you have taken this role to sort of, you know, educate and kind of disrupt the way that maybe medical education or the way that surgeons and doctors have been trained. And so I'm kind of curious, you know, you gave us your background of why the self-healing is important to you and maybe where that came from on a personal level. But how do you tie that in today with where you see the medical industry, if you will, right, in the future? Do you see more doctors or medical schools trying to incorporate more of the self-healing? I mean, The Body Keeps the Score is a bestseller for a reason, right? So I'm really curious about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's a great question. And we started out talking about change. And, you know, one of the things that's changing rapidly in this country is the medical system. It's bankrupt. And there's not enough money to take care of people. There's not enough doctors to take care of people. And people have real challenges medically. And the one of the big myths in this world is that we have to age ungracefully. Aging, basically, I've searched the literature. There's nothing that proves that our bodies age and break down. But the medical system is the biggest business in this country. And so, you know, we do things to people instead of teaching people to take care of themselves. So the change in the system has brought about a need for better ways for people to take care of themselves and use the medical system for the things that they can't. Yeah, you break your leg, you break your femur in half, and it's facing sideways, you need surgery. Okay, we've got that. But on the other hand, you have back pain and radiating leg pain. Okay, yeah, you may have a herniated disc, or you may have an irritation. And in most cases, we find that conservative care does just as well as operations, if not better, with a lot less complications. So braces, a good back brace that's flexible and moves dynamically with the patient, allowing them to use it intermittently as they need it for some support. Also therapy, changing lifestyle. Are you sitting all day? Does sitting bother you or does standing? So we begin to educate people. And then we look at Far Eastern medicine, the way medicine really was practiced. I mean, if you read most of the greats, and Andrew Weil has done a great job of bringing actually education and his own university to basing on this holistic theory. And you know, but if you read any of the greats, it all comes back to Eastern medicine puts the body in a good shape and position. Mark, you mentioned acupuncture. There's many alternatives, massage, reflexology, as well as standard therapies and medications and meditation. And then if nothing else is working, we move on to medications and medicines, and then, you know, trying to avoid pain medicines, which we can take less of by meditating and using that to enhance that. So I think the shift here and the way I see things is, yeah, the change in the system and the way things are going, we are able to now teach people to trust themselves a little more because they're going to have to.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that is so important, as you referred to, as the external body. And I think in psychotherapy, for example, it's been the same for decades. It's designed to keep people coming back weekly to see a therapist, yeah. Versus teaching them how to maybe self-heal their inner worlds as well. So I love your perspective. And then obviously it's so important to just integrate because we are whole beings, right? We're not internal and external. So great, great insights. Sorry, Mark, please go ahead with your question.
No, it's okay. Just listening to you, Scott, I was thinking about it. It's kind of like with a lot of things in life. It's almost like we got too smart, like society got too smart, like modern medicine got too smart. And there's all these great ways we can fix things, like you said, versus listening to our bodies, listening to nature, you know, cooperating with nature, cooperating with, you know, the mind-body connection. And, yeah, you know, and it's sort of back to basics, right, in a way.
Yeah, we've gotten technically efficient, but emotionally, we're infantile. And, right. and you know, one of the things that happened years ago is I had an injury, personal injury. We had the family up, and my wife arranged this, as she does everything in my life and takes care of me and our business and every aspect of my world, and makes my ideas work. She has many better ideas too, but we were on a family ski vacation, and I blew out my shoulder. And I didn't ski, so it was clear that I certainly shouldn't have been snowboarding. But our son talked me into that, and we did. And I knew better as a surgeon that everybody who snowboards eventually falls. So anyway, I could not find one device to give me comfort that didn't feel like it strangulated me. And so that led to our path of our other business doctor in the house, where I began making braces. I put myself in my fanny pack that I had on hand, and I cut my straps off my ski pants, figuring I'd never use them again, and strapped myself in. And that became our shoulder device, which is a arm sling with no neck straps. And then we went on from there, and I realized that, wow, braces really do help people better than surgery and better than many of these other things. So I think, again, we come back to your theme of change. What's the change? You know, we all have to be stimulated a little bit. I was overstimulated there, but to impose change and impart that, and then I could bring that to the medical world.
By the way, I'm going to shift direction a little bit because you mentioned your wife, and I promised you I was going to bring her up. And for a specific reason, though, which is that you also mentioned in our pre-interview that you are one of the most inefficient people you know. But I would argue, in a way, you're very efficient, because what you do is you've done something. You know, I'm a student of the strategic coach, Dan Sullivan. I've talked about this on the show before. And one of the things he talks about is focusing on your unique abilities and getting rid of everything else. And you are one of the best examples I know of that. And we talked about how lucky you are to have Laura, and I know how much she does for you in your life. But everybody has somebody like that if they're thinking about being efficient. So in a way, you are very efficient, because you're freed up to be. A lot of your work, I know, is creative work. You know, it's like coming up with new ideas and thoughts and materials for people to listen to and to read and to, you know, so I wanted to point that out. Do you have any comment on that, how you focused on your unique ability?
Yeah, other than the fact that I'm now clearly in trouble,
I'm glad to be able to help you with that.
Yeah, my wife, Laura, she guides my life. She runs my life. I often say, and it's true, I married her because she was the only one who actually told me what I didn't want to hear, and told me the truth about myself. And she's my greatest champion, and she's my greatest critic. But I also learned that she is an extraordinarily capable person. And I openly admit, my wife runs my life. She organizes things. She organizes our family. She makes things work, and it's a great, great thing. But she also embraces the, I had a friend years ago tell me that the problem with my wife and me was we were codependent, And I told him that was the nicest thing he ever said to me.
And it wasn't the problem. It was the solution, actually.
It was right? The solution. Exactly right. It was the solution. She basically balances me very well. And if you believe in karma, which I do, I mean, people are brought together and brought together for reasons. And she came to my life to make me capable. And she's done a wonderful job of that.
Well, it sounds like she's done more than keep you productive because I'm sorry, now we're running kind of a little short on time. I just wanted to mention that you have authored a number of books as well. So maybe tell us a little bit about that because it sounds like it's a way for you to get your message out there. And maybe the help of your wife has helped you focus on that and bring out that creativity.
Yes. Even though she told me initially I couldn't write, and she was correct. I have to have a lot of help writing my books. But my original books were on carpal tunnel and nerve pain and nerve injury and injuries to the upper arm and in the neck and shoulder area. And
isn't your book called, if I remember, Light at the End of the Carpal Tunnel? Or I think something like that.
Very good memory, Mark. Yes, that was my first
great
book.
Title.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was lucky enough to have Dr. Bernie Siegel, a world healer, embrace this with me and become a great friend and help me write that book. And I went on from there to moving into a lot of other healing books, A Surgeon's Self-Hypnosis Healing Solution, talking about using meditation and relaxation for surgery and healing. And my latest book, The Opioid Alternative, basically offering something to help people utilize medications and drugs in a better way and in a safer way. And if they were using them more than they wanted to, even decreasing the amount and enhancing that by using meditation, not taking use of both together off the table.
If you had one of your books that you would recommend that our listeners read first, which would that be?
I'd say the one that seems to resonate with the world right now would probably be A Surgeon's Self-Hypnosis Healing Solution, My Father's Secret. And it's basically my father's story and the story of how I came to be where I am and learn how we can take better care of ourselves.
By the way, I'm glad you said that one. I want to read that one myself, because as much as I knew a lot of your story, I didn't know that story. And that's fascinating to me. And it's,
I would be privileged to get you a copy.
only if it's signed, Scott, we'll make a trade.
I'll do that. And I'll get your album. That'll be perfect.
And my book. I'll get you my book.
Yes. And your book as well, Mark. If you have the multi-talents.
We're just about to close, so we like to end with a fun question. So I know you're a voracious learner. What is your favorite material to read?
Oh, well, to my wife's consternation, I don't read novels as much. I love self-help books. Surprising, right?
Me too.
Anywhere from Wayne Dyer, Ram Dass, Bernie Siegel's got wonderful series of books. There are so many wonderful books. Another book that's on another realm there is The Active Side of Infinity by Carlos Castaneda. Very interesting book that will make you think very differently about shaman healing and many of the old time or Far Eastern, as Andrew were pointing out, philosophies and healing.
And interesting you came up with that, because that's perfect book for me right now, because I'm thinking about all that shaman treatments and things like that. So that would be a great introduction to that, I think. So thank you.
I just put that on my list as well. I just did a Temescal earlier this year, which was a new thing for me, the big sweat lodge in the jungles in Mexico. And the shamans are a real deal for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I always laugh. I'll end on this, that I have so many psychologists in my life who are obviously from my father on, who are friends and dear friends and people who just, I was very involved in the Hypnosis Society for a long while. And So came to know many, many great people in this realm. And I realized that the world needs more psychologists. It's hard to find people doing that. And I think, Angie, as you pointed out, learning to do therapy more efficiently has become something that is it. And again, giving people more empowerment, teaching them the path, and then helping them move on that.
Yeah, so, wonderful.
I think we're out of time. I just want to mention that many years ago when I started as an attorney, for a friend of mine, I started the National Society of Hypnotherapists and was the general counsel to that organization. So early on, I went to some of those meetings and absorbed a lot of information, did a lot of self-hypnosis, etc. So this is why you and I need to get together more often because we have a lot to talk about. So
we'll sit and meditate.
That's right. That'd be great, actually. So yeah. Listen, great to have you here, Scott. I'm really glad. And I'm sure we could do another show in the future if you'd like, because there's lots more to talk about.
Thank you. I appreciate being with both of you and really enjoyed the company and the time together.
And thank you to our listeners for being here today with us on Founders Forum. We'll see you next week.
We hope you